The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Brightside Chat.
This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Hey, welcome back to The Bright Side and issue number 84, Superman the Movie from 1978. We jump in the Wayback Machine and we go over this movie, and let's just say John doesn't necessarily jump into the machine because he's watching this movie through today's eyes, and wow, is this episode filled with Johnisms. Very entertaining. I if you listen closely, you can hear me laughing hysterically in the background. I tried not to get it all recorded so that we could hear everything he was saying, but it was a riot. I had a blast. He clearly has a blast. It's not even like him, but there's a disclaimer at the end just to let you know that he really does like the movie. So let's have some fun and let's get into the store. Hey, John, it's Monday. I'm back. Very excited to be here. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. This is the week. I think the store might be open this week.
Awesome.
I'm hoping to get in and get some books.
I hope so.
Me too.
Me too. Businesses.
For your sake and their sake.
I didn't even ask you. I mean, you said people were coming in, but I mean, last week I didn't even ask you, but business is going pretty good?
Well, I mean, it's going. You know, yeah. It's not good by any means, I wouldn't say. But, you know, it's funny how your expectations shift when something like this happens.
Yes.
Know, because I'm happy now just to be doing a couple hundred bucks a day, you know, because it's all better than zero, you know.
Right.
But, you know, I'm by no means making the money that I should be making. Now, again, my expenses are way down, too, because I'm running less payroll and I don't have giant diamond bills
right
to pay. So it's all relative. But you know, it's enough right now. I'm still going, so that's all that matters. I hope that when things start ramping up again and we start having, you know, these bigger invoices coming in, that people are able to come in and pick up their, you know, come in and pick up their stuff. That's going to be the trick.
Right. You made the comment last week that you had people coming in just buying stuff off the shelves because they're dying to buy books.
I did, but that's still the illusion is that, like, I had people steady from
right
all day long.
Yeah, no, yeah, you didn't have a line out the door, but
yeah.
My question at the time should have been, and I didn't ask it then, but do you think people are doing that because they're trying to support you? Like, I got to imagine that. I know when I get in the store, I'm buying as much as I can.
Yeah, undoubtedly. You know, the people that came in definitely wanted to make sure they didn't leave empty-handed and made it.
Well, that would be awful.
Even. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've had people do it.
Oh.
You know, I've had several people come in and browse and turn around and walk back out again. But for the most part, they're trying to buy something. But, you know, again, I have people that get 15, 20 books a week on average on subscription.
Right.
And, you know, that generates the bulk of my revenue for those days and for those weeks. And that's not happening right now. So, and the number of physical people coming in is way, you know, way, way down, even though we're open.
Right.
There's, you know, just still not a lot of people coming through. So it's okay. Like I said, the new normal right now, quote unquote. Now, I hate that. I want to punch the next person that says new normal to me, but,
well, I'm glad I'm here.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, it's just funny how you, adjust your expectations to things.
Yeah.
Because
I've had like numerous conversations with people from all different businesses and, you know, some in the business that I'm in with car dealerships and vendors doing what I do, and then others, suppliers and stores alike, retail stores that are trying to get back open. And the number that everybody keeps coming up with is, if I can get back to half of what I was doing, that's considered successful.
Well, it's funny because
that's amazing. Because if 6 months ago, if you said I'm going to cut everything in half, you'd be like, I can't survive. Right. And now you're like, well, I just want to get there, and that's what we consider successful.
But that doesn't mean it's still survivable.
But you got to get to somewhere. But it's better than what we're doing right now.
Right. But what's funny is that, like, other businesses, like, I talk to, well, I mean, I talk to my wife every day, but I mean, my wife's in retail and her store opened up the same time mine did. Like, she's doing, like, Christmas numbers every day. Like, that store is just making money hand over fist. You know, she works at home, which is, you know, just decor, home decor stuff.
Right.
So it's far from essential merchandise. But, you know, they're making money, like I said, hand over fist. A customer came in today that works for Guitar Center, and he was telling me, like, since they've opened, they're doing 2 to 3 times their normal business every day.
Well, yeah, everybody needs a microphone.
Yeah, but I'm doing a tenth of my business.
Right.
So, like, I haven't seen that.
But you also don't have the product. You also
argue that Guitar Center is not getting new guitars every day either.
There is a big push that microphones are selling out and a lot of stuff that people are using for their online meetings. So that's sending people to Guitar Center for all of the, whether it's mixing boards or microphones or whatever you use to podcast or in headphones, meetings, stuff like that. I can see that. Whereas, a comic book store is typically busy on Wednesdays and like a Saturday. And that's, you know, people are, you know, Saturday you get browsers or people that can't get in on Wednesday, but they want their new books. And there just aren't a lot of new books. I think that will ramp back up. But it's in the home decor thing, that kind of makes sense too. Because up here, try to go in a Home Depot up here. I don't know if it's like that down there, but all these people out of work. And especially if you're out of work or you're working from home and so you're still getting paid and they have nothing to do otherwise because you can't go out shopping, you can't go.
Right.
I go into Home Depot during the week when I typically would go to Home Depot for work to get my supplies.
Right.
There's lines down the aisle. Like, and it's like, it's crazy. This is that rant I didn't want to get on the other day because it's like they're saying no other stores can open, but somehow Home Depot is essential. And the entire state is in every Home Depot.
Right.
And
no,
it's like,
don't
open the little store and spread people out. Let's put everybody in a big box store.
Don't open my store that might have 3 people in it.
Right.
You know, we can have Home Depot, like you said, with 1,000 people in there.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're being compliant. They have a lady at the door checking how many people are in there. Yeah. And I've yet to see what that number is because the place is packed.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's like, what is the number? Like, my wife was telling me, you know, her store is like, I don't know, 100,000 square feet or more. So 25% for her is like 500 people, you know? So
that's a huge wedding.
Yeah.
And you can't do that.
Right. So.
All right. All right. That's enough. I got to, I can't even watch the news. You want to get into this?
Sure.
All right. I have a trailer to play. I searched for some trailers. One of the trailers I found, it was the official teaser from Superman in 1978, and I played it, and the entire thing was just music and, like, names being scrawled across the screen. I'm like, well, that isn't going to play well in a podcast.
That's a teaser.
Yeah. So this one here, I edited down, but this is the best I could come up with from 1978, but it is an official one. So we'll let this play out and see what happens.
My friends, I'm not given to wild, unsupported statements. And I tell you that we must evacuate this planet immediately.
Jor-El, be reasonable.
Once there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good. In one tragic moment, that world was destroyed. But there was one survivor.
Now, wouldn't that beat all get out?
Hey,
because of the wisdom and compassion of Jor-El. Because he knew the human race had the capacity for goodness, he sent us his only son. His name is Kal-El. He will call himself Clark Kent. But the world will know him as Superman. This year, Superman brings you the gift of flight. Superman, the movie.
All right. Kicking off right from the trailer, I actually have a couple of quotes in that trailer that I found really interesting.
Okay.
First and foremost, this should get us off to a good start with the movie. The quote where they were talking about a civilization for a greater capacity of good.
Yeah.
Does that really hold up? Because they allowed their planet to be destroyed, like explode. Right. And they took three criminals and sent them off into the Phantom Zone, but which, in, according to the movie, is that little flat piece that flips off
right.
into space.
The mirror. The
Does
mirror
that is. Really seem like... And they have villains. It's not like they're not like without villains. So how... I mean, right. they seem just like us.
Yeah.
It's like, how do they have a greater capacity for good? I mean, it's easy to be good when you come here and you're all powerful.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I thought that was a funny little thing just listening to it right now. Like, well, they seem just like us on their own planet.
Yeah, what's the definition of that? It's hard to say.
Right.
They seem kind of snappy and judgmental.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. So. I mean, and we'll get into that with the planet destroying and stuff being destroyed and everything. But the other one was, I love the old timey talk. And it's like, wouldn't that beat all Get Out?
Yeah.
When he first saw her, that was in the trailer.
Well, that's, I was thinking, like, when you got finished with that trailer, like, did you want to just get up and rush right out and see that movie?
Like, well, not nowadays, but I bet you in 78. Well, here's the
last. I don't
the
know.
Last...
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember when I was 8 and saw that trailer, but
I'll tell
it's
you,
not very exciting.
It's not you know? Nowadays, but you forget that last line, the gift of flight, that yeah. was huge. And to have, and it's actually in the movie too. One of the headlines, remember when they first sight Superman and, was it Perry White throwing down the newspapers? And one of it's like, look, no wires.
Yeah.
Which was actually one of the things they were saying, like they're leading up to this movie. That was a big deal. Like this was going to be done without wires. It's going to, you know, it's going to, we're going to make, you're going to get to see a man fly. And that was a big deal back then. Nowadays, we're like, yeah, so?
Well, yeah. We've seen it in better, you know?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it was huge.
It's only
looking back on it now,
years.
It looked pretty clunky. You know, the flying didn't look that great.
Well, yeah.
You know, but again, we're looking at the time. But can we just get to the, like, the Uh-oh. Longest opening ever for a movie? It was like, you don't see openings like that anymore either. You know,
no.
It's just like 10 minutes of like names whooshing on the screen.
Yeah. Which
now, great score. Like still like John Williams, one of the best, well, probably the best composer out there. Like, you know, responsible for every iconic score you can think of is his. But I was just like, is this ever going to like start? Like,
yeah,
you're getting the whole end credits at the beginning of the movie. You know, we know who the grip was and the best boy and, you know, all that stuff going across the screen. And then how about Marlon Brando getting top billing for the entire movie?
Exactly.
A huge controversy back in the day, right?
That's what I was
made
just
more money
say.
Than the whole budget of the whole movie was his. And he's got maybe 3 minutes of screen time. And it's like the most wooden, uninspired performance you've ever seen, but
I thought it was textbook Marlon Brando.
Well, that's true.
Wasn't it? And it's like,
yeah,
I guess they had to have a name. They were trying to put a name to the movie.
Well, for sure. Everybody was unknown. Well, I mean, you had some, a lot of the bit characters were known, like Jackie Cooper was a known actor. Like there was some, Gene Hackman obviously was a known actor. But you know, Margot Kidder and Christopher Reeve, like they were nobodies.
Right.
So, yeah, you had to have those names up there, but.
Ned Beatty.
Ned Beatty he was known. He was known. So, yeah, I mean, there was some names attached to it, but I guess none of them had the star power of Marlon Brando.
No, he was huge. So, he was huge. Yeah. So overall, what did you think? You look hesitant to even talk about it because...
I mean, again, it's just another one of those movies that it doesn't really hold up over time, you know? Like, it is what it is. Like, you know, it's always going to be... Like, he's still the classic Superman. Like, he's the definition of Superman, right? Like, there's still nobody, in my mind, personifies the character more than Christopher Reeve. You know, Clark Kent and Superman.
Right.
But, you know, it's hokey as all get out, you know? And,
well, like I said, just know, like the line that, you know, Pa Kent says, you know, whatever that was, that old-timey from like the 40s type line, right?
Right.
Well, I think that's what they were going for. And watching this movie, especially after BVS last week, you have such extremes. I'm watching this movie thinking like this is the quintessential origin story. It was, right. I felt like it was so well done that it still plays well because it's like right from the pages of the comic books.
It is. I mean, it's definitely almost beat for beat, you know, what it's always been in the comics. There was no deviation. Well, I mean, there was some deviation, right? Because in the comics, you never really got the, I'm going to travel through space and time for 18 Earth years and, you know, come back at 30 years.
So they were trying to add a little bit more to it.
Right. But I mean, that was a little bit different from anything we'd seen in the comics. I also thought the line, I found it interesting that, like, the time seemed weird. Like, when he says, by the time you hear this, I will have been dead for many thousands of years.
Thousands of your years.
Right, thousands of your years. But it's like, how old is he supposed to be then?
Well, that's all gets into time travel. And, like, if you travel at the speed of, and believe me, if Joe listens to this podcast, we have this discussion all the time on, like, how, if you travel, watch Interstellar.
Yeah. I've seen it.
Yeah. So that does all the time travel and everything. It's like, if you go there and back, you come back your age, but everybody else, the planet aged 100 years or whatever ridiculous thing, you know, so there is science behind all that stuff. But what I thought was funny is, and this falls into the, you know, your John Cerconi type thinking. How did you send them the knowledge if you're thousands of years old? You sent him thousands of years ago.
Right.
You know, it's like, cause he goes, I'm going to say it when he's putting him in the capsule. He's like, I'm sending you with the knowledge of this planet and bull and the history and everything you need.
But
technology.
The history would have been from like the
pyramids.
Yeah. I was saying it would have been right from like the Greeks, like from Greece and ancient civilization.
Right.
It wouldn't have been. Yeah. Right. It wouldn't have been, from 1978 Kansas. So yeah, that was kind of weird.
Yeah. If you look at it that way.
You know, again, my other thing too is, you know, he's traveling from Krypton to Earth, it takes 3 years, supposedly. He's not in any kind of suspended animation. He's aware because he's being taught the
entire
time.
3 of his years, yes. But,
right.
I mean, actual years, yeah.
So what was that in dog years? Probably like a couple hundred years? It's like, what's he eating and drinking? Like, how did he sustain himself? You know?
Oh, they have little.
There was no tubes. There was no tubes in his arms or anything like that.
They had little packets of Tang.
Yeah, what it was.
It was the 70s, Tang was the astronaut's drink.
Right.
So they had the little packets of Tang to get to sustain him.
I don't know. It's like, you know, it doesn't seem like there's a toilet anywhere in there.
I was
there,
just going to say, and a little potty to the side.
Yeah. You know, he is naked, so, you know, he doesn't have to worry about changing his diapers, which I guess was convenient, but... Is he just wallowing in his own filth? Like, is he just laying there in it? So,
of course.
Yeah. So that was kind of weird.
Enough with that. I mean, of course there are holes.
I know. Like I said, that's why I'm like, oh man, this is super cheesy, but it is still, you know, it's one of those great movies. Like, I'll always look back on it fondly and all of that, but man, I was shaking my head a lot. You know,
well, let's get to something like when he lifts the car off of his grandfather or off of his father, I should say, off of Pa Kent. I think that's like, that's the origin of Superman. Right. It's the cover of number one. You know, and here they are putting it in the origin in this movie of him lifting the car up, you know, and
it's little things like that. Not to interrupt you, but I thought was super weird. It's like they opened the movie with the black and white old time.
Yeah.
Comic action comics. But it's like it wasn't the action cover that was completely never appeared on any comic books. It's like, why wouldn't you have actually used like the cover to Action Comics number one? That didn't make any sense to me at all.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't do that.
But yeah, I had forgot about that too. Like I was like, what's going on here? And then I was like, oh yeah, I forgot all about that.
Yeah. Cause I remembered when I put it in, when I first got the 4K disc back in the fall, and I was like, I put it in. I was so excited to see it. And you're like, what's that? I don't remember that at all. That was weird.
I didn't either. I did not remember it either. Because I think probably when they replayed it later on TV,
yes,
they probably didn't include that. Like, well, they probably cut that out. I don't know. the commercial break or something.
Yeah, you had mentioned earlier, I think before we were recording, that you were like, you know, seeing this back in the 70s and 78, seeing it in the theater. And I know I saw it in the theater, but I don't have a memory of it. I don't remember.
I have a memory of walking out. I have a memory of walking out of it. And, you know, loving it. Like, so I vaguely remember seeing it. But.
See, the reason I don't remember it is because all of my memories of this movie are on HBO in the 80s because I watched it so many times that it's like, it's all blended together that I don't remember what I saw in the theater. And that's probably why I forgot the opening, because you're right. On HBO, they might have taken all that off.
Because I remember watching it on like the CBS Sunday movie too, where they had to split it over two nights because it was so long.
Yep.
And
I remember my mother letting me stay up to watch it.
Yeah,
I had to
get permission to stay up till 10 because it started at 8.
Yep.
And I was supposed to go to bed at 9, but you know.
Yep.
Yeah, and I remember watching it obviously when it hit the HBO circuit infinitely, whatever summer that it hit HBO. But then probably haven't seen it since, or maybe once since then, you know, I mean, it's not like you don't run into it very often because it doesn't play on anything anymore.
Well, I think it's on DC Universe. Well, they're all on DC Universe.
Well, it might
be,
but
I didn't go
look for it when I got DC Universe. I didn't pull it up and watch it. So yeah, I hadn't seen it in a long time. Now, I mean, I remember most of it, but yeah, none of it was fresh. Like it was kind of like rewatching it for the first time, you know, because I hadn't seen it in so long.
Hey, you want to have a quick segue here for a second? Something I forgot to talk to you about last week.
Sure.
And we'll get right back to Superman in a minute.
All right.
Another DC property. Did you see Stargirl?
No.
Okay.
No, I haven't watched it yet. Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. I meant to ask you that too, between shows. I said, well, you didn't even talk about Stargirl on the last episode, but I haven't watched it yet. You don't seem like you were thrilled by it, so I don't know, but...
Back to Superman.
Okay.
I can't wait for you to see it.
Yeah, I haven't watched it.
We'll definitely have to talk...
It's not like I had super high hopes for it to start out with, but I was looking forward to it, so we'll see.
Me too.
Yeah.
Wait till you see it.
Okay.
It's... we'll talk next week. There should be... I'm holding out hope because... one episode in, but I'm not very hopeful at all.
No.
And I can't wait for you to see it.
Yeah, I kind of had forgot on Monday. I forgot it dropped
on DC Universe for that.
And then I watched Superman that night.
Right.
And then I got into some other stuff and kind of slipped my mind until
it dropped early on Monday morning. Monday morning, which DC Universe typically puts stuff out at 9 a.m. when it dropped, Harley Quinn drops at 9 a.m. on Fridays, right? So I was expecting it to be there at 9 on Monday, and it was there when I got up. So I watched it, and I was pretty excited for it. Like you said, I wasn't like, oh, my God, the greatest thing I've ever seen. But I couldn't wait for it, and I watched it, and I watched the first scene, and I was like, maybe that's just the opening. And then it kept going. You'll know what I'm talking about when you see it.
Because it's also a character that I know next to nothing about. you know, like I don't know anything about.
No,
the character,
but I get the origin of the character from was it Geoff Johns? And I like that idea, and that's what makes me feel bad about it is because I mean he wrote this about his sister.
Well, right,
like,
it's a very personal.
Yeah, and I just. Again,
thing for him,
and I want.
But
to
he was
like
also heavily involved in the production, so
yes,
he I don't
wrote
think he's
it,
I don't think he's disappointed with it.
Well, let
he
me
might
just
not
say
be,
this.
But
let me just say this: he didn't act it.
Oh, really? Is he in it?
No, but what my biggest issue with it is the acting.
Oh!
I'm not crazy about it. I don't. So we'll talk about it later this week, and because we'll have two episodes.
Because I'll catch up on. I mean, I'll watch it probably tomorrow when I'm off and Lydia's home. So,
all right, back to Superman.
All right,
nice little segue there. So, like I was saying, I think this is the quintessential origin story. This is where I mean, it hits all the notes. It hits the costume, the suit, the I think my favorite Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah.
It's the definition of everything. For a lot of people, that's why all of these other movies, like all these other Supermans, why can't you do that?
Right.
I think the answer is because it's already been done.
Right.
And if you try to, if people tried to duplicate this, it would look like people were just trying to duplicate Christopher Reeve. And they don't want to do that. So they try to come up with another version.
Well, and the funny thing is, jump forward to the Brandon Routh Superman movie, and the largest criticism for that movie was that, like, nothing happened. Like, there was no fight. Like, his biggest goal is just to lift up the island or whatever it is, but there's no fight. He doesn't punch anybody. There's no real action. And people criticized that it was just a big land deal. It was all about real estate. And then you go back to this movie, and it's the same damn thing.
Like, right.
He doesn't fight anybody. Nothing happens.
Nope.
He doesn't punch anything. It's all about a land deal. Lex wants to create Lextopia or whatever it is, you know, and it's just a big real estate movie. So why did it work in 78, but it didn't work in 88 or whenever it was that movie, you know, 98,
that
came out.
That was 02, I think, or something
like
that.
Yeah, I don't know when it was, but you know what I mean? It was like that movie got criticized, you know, people hate that movie, and you know that's one of the biggest criticisms of it. And this movie was the same thing. Like, he doesn't fight anybody. Like, he's not Superman at all. He flies around rescuing cats out of trees. You know,
right?
You know,
no, but I thought that was great because that scene when in this, you know, in 78,
and then the girl gets smashed in the face. That's, you know, you don't see it, but you can hear it.
No, she's. How many times have I
told you not to lie? And then
I
she gets
swear we had this
face.
Conversation before. That's why I was like, I told you. Yeah. How many times have I told you not to tell stories?
Yeah.
And then a big.
Like,
and you're like, oh,
it's
my
like,
God.
I was like, geez, that's definitely 1970. You couldn't do that now.
No.
You know?
No.
So, but yeah, it was. It's funny that, you know, there's no real super action in this. And then he gets taken down with the kryptonite chain around his neck. But it's like, why couldn't you just take it off, dude?
He's not strong
it
enough.
Like, that was, but it was just hanging there. It was like,
that was a pretty thick chain.
Just take it off, man. Just take it off. You know?
Aside from that, I mean, well, I know you like your little.
Well, yeah, I just kept shrugging my head. There's so many things. Like,
but it was 1978.
Like right, but like the whole helicopter thing in the beginning with Lois, right? The helicopter starts to take off.
The helicopter tripped on a cable.
It trips on the cable, right? But then it's like, why didn't you just set it back down? It's like,
it's
just
a
keep
stubborn
moving,
helicopter.
Right, just keep moving forward. It's like, dude, just set it down and you'll be fine. You know, you don't have to go over the top. I was like, what is going on here, you know? It's like it's like, oh, I'm stuck. Let me keep going.
Got it.
Yeah. So it's like, oh my God. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, it's hard to be, I hate to be overcritical, because it sounds like the last couple of movies, because we did the same thing with Blade, and we did the same thing with Spider-Man, and it's like, you know, we're looking with our kind of like updated lenses on old movies.
I enjoyed this.
I can't help it. I enjoyed it too. Like, I enjoyed it thoroughly, but I just was shaking my head through the whole thing. Like, this is just so dumb, you know?
<It's> Well, and you know what's funny is, you know the one that, and I think it even made it onto Big Bang Theory, where he catches Lois, and people right. say, like, that couldn't happen because Lois would get cut in half by his arms.
Right.
Because
That's what they did in The Boys, right?
Yes.
It was kind of like similar to that in The Boys.
Right. But if you watch that scene, and the way I watched it this time, he actually is decelerating with her because he doesn't right. fly up and just grab her. If you watch the background,
right. he kind of stops.
He's actually going
and then
down with
starts,
her, and
right.
then
he
slows down.
Right.
And he does the same thing when he catches the helicopter. He's right. flying up to it, but then when he gets to it, he immediately like reverses and slows down with it. So he's catching right. it like an egg so it doesn't break. And he did that with Lois. And if you watch the background, he actually does do that. Yeah. But it's having these conversations over and over. And people say, oh, if he just flew up and caught her, he'd cut her right in half. It's like, well, actually, they took care of that back in 78. Right. And if you watch the background, he's actually flying down with her to catch right. her like you would catch an egg. No, some of the like the 78 stuff that I really liked. Perry saying to Jimmy Olsen, why am I paying you $40 a week?
Yeah. I noticed that too.
$40 a here. Week. You're yeah. like, wow.
Right. And so then how much was Clark making? Probably like $60 a week. And he goes in and says, send half my salary home to my mother.
Yeah.
It's like, how are you living in Metropolis, which is like New York City, on $30 a week? I don't care if it's 1978 or 1928. You know,
well, I know my
you're not
dad,
living there for $30 a week.
I know my dad was making in the 70s. He was making $10,000 a year.
Yeah.
And that was a good salary back then.
Yeah. I don't know what that equates to weekly. What, $200 a week? Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. Right around $180 a week. So
imagine that. That's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. And, what was it? Oh, the, when, Martha says, like, she wanted
Martha.
To, yeah, she wanted to keep, oh, and I didn't know that, too. Martha Clark Kent?
I didn't know that either, and that might just be for the movie.
From the movie,
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Her middle name, like, Martha Clark yeah. Kent, like, maybe that's her maiden name, and that's where they came up with Clark Kent.
I would think so, because it doesn't sound like a middle name for a woman, so
right.
it was probably her maiden name.
But yeah, he called her Martha Clark Kent. Are you thinking what I think you're thinking? And it's yeah. like, she goes, it could be a child of my cousin that was recently orphaned from North right. Dakota. And like you can't
it's
do
like
that
nowadays. They don't have laws in North Dakota.
It's right. Like, and not only people just went, okay.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, we've said that.
Found a kid.
We've said that every time we've ever talked about Superman. It's like, how do you explain just having this kid? You know?
Right.
It's like, there's no adoption laws or no.
Well, back then, know. No. You just had kids. And it's like,
no, but
oh,
even
look.
In the beginning, even in 1939 in the comic book, in Action Comics number one, they go to the adoption agency with the kid and try to make it legal or whatever. Mm. So they had laws even back then. So in the 70s, it still wasn't legal just to appropriate kids from the middle of nowhere. You know?
I know. It's recently orphaned. How convenient. Yeah. Now you can't, right. can't call my cousin. She's dead.
Right. You can't check on it. You can't fact check me. Because there was there's no hospital records or birth certificates in 1978. So,
yeah,
you know,
one scene in particular, and like what I really, really enjoyed, and like thinking this is 1978, and there's a lot of talk lately of especially on social media about people talking about like you take a scene from Star Wars or any of the End Games, and you go, wow, the cinematography in this is unbelievable, and you're like. It's like looking at a nice scene that Bob Ross did and saying cinematography because it's different. I'm not saying it's not artistic,
right?
But
it's all
not
digital,
cinematography.
Right. Right.
So I was thinking I would get your thoughts on that scene when Clark is saying goodbye to Martha,
mm-hmm.
and he's about
to leave in the field,
and they're standing in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
That scene shot, like, just watch that scene. And that to me is like, that's cinematography.
Yeah.
Because you have, and that's all real.
Right.
And that's what makes to me like cinematography, what cinematography is. It's like you've got artists standing in that field going, we have to get this shot. And the old school with the, you know, your hands up and your thumbs, you're making the two L's and you're like, get right. this shot right here. And then did they bring in wind machines to make the field blow the way it blew? Or was
Probably.
It just the perfect day? No,
well,
I
yeah,
mean, the entire
know.
Fields
yeah.
were blowing and right. it sounded great. It looked unbelievable, and you yeah. have the blue sky, the yellow of the what wheat field or whatever wheat, it is,
yeah.
and it's just a beautifully shot
yeah,
scene.
It looked great,
and it's like that's not special effects. Here we yeah. are in a Superman movie, and we can't wait to see a man fly. But
right, we're worried about the wheat fields.
That scene, it's such a beautiful scene, and it's like now that's cinematography,
right?
That's all you have to say about that.
Well, I don't know what else you want me to say about it. I mean, I agree with you. It looked great. I said that.
I would like to go back down the John Ciccone road for a second.
Sure.
I had this thought.
I live there. So
shortly after that scene. So he hikes all the way to, what is the North Pole?
Yeah, I guess Antarctica. Or
yeah, well,
right?
I think it was the North Pole because you can't walk to Antarctica.
Oh. Well, he doesn't have to walk, though. He can fly.
No, he hadn't flown yet. That's the point. Remember? He hadn't flown yet. And that's why he was wearing
He just ran really fast. And like, how hokey did that? Let's go back to that for a second. When he was racing that train, what was going on with those rubber legs? It was like, I don't even know what was happening there.
I know
there.
I mentioned this to you before. You know who was on the train, right?
Yeah, Noelle Neal was Lois Lane.
Yeah, she played Lois Lane on the show, and that's supposed to be Lois. The daughter is supposed to be the Lois Lane from this movie.
Right.
So, yeah.
But yeah, she was the original Lois Lane in the 50s show.
Right.
Yeah.
But no, when he finally gets up to the North Pole and he throws, you know, with his super strength, you can see how far he threw the actual green crystal.
Yeah, which, let me ask you this too. Why did he have to do that? Like, why didn't you just walk to where you wanted it to be and then put it there?
Well, you don't want to be standing on the construction as it's going up.
And, but, like, how did that happen? Like, where did all that stuff come from? You know what I mean? It's like, The whole Fortress
technology.
Of Solitude comes out of this little crystal. It's like, I was like, that's kind of like, what are those little snakes that you get and, you know, you put water on
water.
Them and they, they
See, so. We just haven't developed our technology yet.
I
We're still
not.
At the little charcoal snake trick.
Yeah.
They've developed their technology because
they can make whole fortresses of solitude.
They have a greater capacity for good, and this is what they've done with it. They've taken little green crystals that can turn into a fortress of solitude.
We skipped over, you know, I know we're in this part now, but we skipped over the whole, like,
tends to be what we do. We already
the
talked
great
about
society, the great society of Krypton. Now, first of
yes.
all, let's
well,
go
I
back
started
because,
with that, but okay,
but this is the first time I've ever seen Krypton. The only time I've ever seen it portrayed as like an icy, dead world. Because I'd never seen it that way before, but like the entirety of Krypton lived in like one apartment building. Like it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of people on that planet.
Well, they had the, they could either put other apartments or hire Marlon Brando.
Yeah. So. But it's like for this great society that's so advanced and has all this technology, there's only about 8 of them that live on that whole planet, you know?
Yeah. And that's what was nice about the,
So it wasn't really a mass extinction event because there was only a couple of them to begin with, and at least 2 of them, well, at least 4 of them got away. So,
right,
you know, half the society is still alive. So,
well, that and anybody else they put in the Phantom Zone previous to those.
That's
3.
True. Yeah, right.
They're still alive too.
Yeah, but I was just like, that's weird. It doesn't seem like there's many people there on Krypton. So
no, but at the time. Again, you're thinking to like Man of Steel Krypton. That was a good example of Krypton. That was, it showed you a more elaborate version of Krypton.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, back in 1978, that's the best they could do. And it was kind of odd that it was an icy planet that was that close to its sun. Usually,
you
get closer
it's usually
to the sun,
warmer.
You heat up.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked, speaking of that, one of the, another John Ciccone-isms. When Jor-El's trying to tell everybody that the planet's going to die, it's going to explode. No. Don't worry. It's just going off its axis a little bit.
Right.
That's
bad.
Is
that a good thing? Right? Well, first of all, I would argue that the planet's already dead, because as we just established, it's a right. lump of ice with no life on it at all, except for right. the 8 people living in the apartment building. So, I think you've already crossed that bridge, dude. The planet's already died. But yeah, it's just tilted off its axis a little bit.
Yeah, just going off axis a little bit.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
Yeah,
so.
Typically that's bad.
And they're like, hey, shut up. Don't make us throw you in the Phantom Zone with Zod over there.
So, yeah, back
what
to
kinda,
the...
And what kind of outfits were they wearing, too, by the way? They look like just a bunch of heads floating around.
They look like Jiffy Pop.
They did. It was
weird.
They looked
like they were wearing tinfoil Jiffy Pop outfits that were all... That's the best they could come up with in 1978 for futuristic...
What the future people would wear.
Right.
So. Yeah, it was just like, it just looks like a bunch of heads.
The only
because it was all, they were all white on an all white background. Everything, everywhere they lived was white. It's like, it's just a bunch of heads floating around. So.
And they're so advanced, their only vehicle that we saw was that, looked like it came out of a prickly bush that they.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
It's like this, what is that?
They're just laying all these crystals that are just going to, they're not going to move at all in the entire space journey.
Well, that's all his knowledge.
Earth. Yeah,
as he was saying it, and like, I got that. I mean,
no,
that's
I got
all
it too.
Each
but it's like
piece of knowledge because we get that in Superman 2 where he keeps sliding them in.
You're right. No,
knowledge.
I get it, but I'm just saying they're not cemented in. There's no tape or Velcro. They just lay there and then stay. You know, as the ship is flying through space for 3 years.
So. Yeah. Well. Or yeah.
It's just, you know, the John-isms. I know you love them.
It's lots of them.
Yeah. Oh, there's a ton of them. Don't even get me going.
I think I have gotten you going.
It's like while we're at it, like, what's up? Like, explain the scene to me where.
Okay.
Like, you know, he goes for his interview with Lois, and then they go, and she's like, do you want to fly with me? And then they go on this, like, 97-minute flight.
Right.
Like, it's the longest thing in the world, and like, what the hell is going on? Like, can you read my mind?
It's like, right. Yeah.
Like, this is it is so bizarre, that whole scene. And then I'm thinking the whole time when they're flying, and he's just got his arm, he's just basically got his arm around her, like, you can see me, they can't see me, but he's just got his arm around her
waist,
upper body, right? Like, he can fly, but she can't. So, like, she'd be hanging straight down. She wouldn't be out. Like, she's got to be planking like crazy. She's got the strongest core muscles I've ever seen because she can't fly. And then he stretches out his hand, and they're just touching fingertips. And she's still flying. She should be, like, hanging straight down, you know, because she can't fly. And I'm like, what is going on here, man? It's crazy.
Well, they screen tested it, and Margot Kidder hanging like a sack of potatoes didn't
I know,
test
but
well.
It didn't test well, but I'm like, come on. There's no aerodynamics happening here. You're Mr. Physics. You should be going screaming that she wouldn't be.
Technically, if you fly fast enough, he could hold her up like that. You just
but then she wouldn't be. If they were flying that fast, she wouldn't be able to breathe because she'd have no oxygen.
It's just a comic book movie.
But that whole thing is like, first of all, that scene is like no joke. It's longer than the scene in Star Trek The Motion Picture when they're taking the shuttle. It just kept on going.
No, but all right. So here's the thing. And this is what I said. That's a great segue because when what we said, as much as we didn't like it when we watched Star Trek The Motion Picture, that scene was for fan service at the time. And you could say the same thing about this scene in Superman, in that it was such a big deal. You can't can't overstate that it was.
No,
a huge
I know it
deal
was their big flying. It was their big flying scene. I get it.
And that was the chance for people to feel like, man or woman, to feel like if you were flying with Superman, look at that. Not only are we going to have a man fly in this movie, we're going to take you for a flight. And yeah. Nowadays, you watch that scene and with her inner monologue playing and you're like, what the heck? It is brutal, but put yourself in 1978 and seeing like, oh my God, like you.
Yeah, I don't remember thinking, I don't remember feeling that way before. Like, I'm sure when I saw it when I was a kid, I wasn't thinking like I think now, but
right.
Like it was painful to watch. I was like, what is...
No, it was.
What is happening?
I agree
here?
With you. It's like that inner monologue. And you're like, what? Can you read my mind? Can you, do you know my thoughts? Right. It's like, my thoughts are, can we get to the next scene?
Because first of all, she's her inner monologue, she's like madly in love with this dude that she met like 8 minutes ago. You know, it's like,
well,
she doesn't even know him, you know? I mean, I get that it's Superman.
All his bodily functions work.
Right. And then it's like, she gets this guy to sit down, right? It's like Superman, the most powerful man in the world or whatever. And she's like, how tall are you? How much do you weigh? You know, it's like, is that what the readers want to know? Really? How tall you are?
That's, and I didn't get when he said 225 and she was like 225. Oh,
yeah,
like,
I know.
Was that like a mysterious, is that a good thing? Number in 78? I was like, 225?
Yeah, that was weird too. It's like, you're a prize winning journalist. That's like the best. That's like your first question you can come up with is, how tall are you?
It's like, yeah. So this is, I consider this a good point. I consider this a highlight of the movie. I can't wait to get your thoughts. But Christopher Reeve acting out Superman, but also acting out Clark Kent. I thought he did such a good job. It actually put legitimacy in that the glasses are a disguise, because the way he acted Clark Kent, I thought was like, my imagination was taking it that Superman is Superman. The disguise is Clark Kent, right?
Right.
And Superman is calm. So when you saw Superman meet Lois on the balcony, he was actually hitting on her at one point. He had a line. Right. I can't remember what it was, but he's like, oh, yeah, that's what it was. She's like, do you have a girlfriend? And he's like, no, but you'll be the first to know.
Right.
You know, he's not a stumbling, bumbling idiot like Clark Kent is.
Right.
And even at the end, when Margot Kidder's like, when Lois Lane's like, I just, wait a minute, Clark's not around. Oh, that's a ridiculous thought, because they're so opposite. You could never believe that Clark Kent could be Superman, because he's so, everywhere he goes, he's like, boom, he's bumping into people. Excuse me. Sorry. And my let me finish. My favorite is when he takes the glasses off in her apartment, but he's dressed
as Clark. Up straighter.
Exactly. Yeah. He changes his posture, and it transforms him into Superman, but it's not the costume. It's not the glasses. It's now he's Superman. And for Christopher Reeve to do that, I thought that's one of the highlights of the movie, because it actually makes that, glasses are going to trick people. It puts that to rest for me.
Right. Well, because the only other version we had seen prior to that was the George Reeves, Adventures of Superman back, obviously before we were both born, we were watching them in reruns.
Right.
But if you watch those shows, anytime Clark, which those shows predominantly, he was Clark Kent way more than he was Superman, but he was still like formidable. Like, he was still a hero. Like, Clark Kent was not portrayed as a bumbling, clumsy, whatever. Like, he was, for some reason, back in the 50s, too, in this show, being a newspaper person held a lot of prestige, because even the chief of police would call him, like, everybody's like, oh, well, Mr. Kent will know what to do, but like I said, he wasn't portrayed, like, he could be Superman just with a hat, with his hat and glasses on. He didn't try to differentiate himself at all in his personality from
Clark Kent. It was a little bit more like when the alley scene in this, where he was still bumbling and he was like, you don't want to do that, sir, the society, but he was still able to, he even did the flip there, like he catches the bullet and then he's laying and pretending he's passed out, but then when he comes to and Lois looks for her purse and he opens his hand and has the big smirk on his face, like, haha. So you got a glimpse of the calm, cool, collected Superman. But then he went right back into his Clark Kent persona and did the hunch and was like, Lois, but you shouldn't have done that. Just for, and he names the exact contents of her purse.
Of her purse, right.
Which was awesome. And which is, that's probably the first time you're given the, he can see through everything. I think that's the first time they touch on it in the movie.
So speaking of that, because then we get the whole thing with the lead later on, but again, we go back to the interview scene, And he's like talking to Lois Lane, giving an interview for the paper, and he just rattles off all his weaknesses. You know, he's like, I can't see through lead, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's like,
yeah,
why are you giving out all that info, dude? You know?
Yeah, I think it was to give the viewer, but it also, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but I think it also plays into the trusting Boy Scout image. And yeah, that's what he's, an air of invincibility.
Right.
Like, yeah, I can't see through lead, but what are you going to do with that?
Right.
You know, what, I mean.
Which really, that, to be fair, now that I'm thinking about it, that wasn't really an interview question. It came up because he couldn't see her underwear.
Right.
You know,
he just slipped up. He goes, oh, right, I can't see through lead.
Right.
It's like, she didn't say, like, what are
but
your
she
weaknesses?
Put that, yeah, but then she puts that in the story too.
And she goes, so, oh, that's interesting. And she writes it down. But yeah, and that's one of those things, like, he slipped up because he is all trusting. And, right, you know, that, I think that's, they're trying to portray that Boy Scout image, that perfect, pristine image. And nowadays it looks like, you know, they're trying to get away and trying to create a more dynamic Superman when right, that's exactly what Superman isn't.
You know, this is dynamic. Right. That is exactly what Superman should be. Yeah. You know, like I said, I love Henry Cavill Superman, you know, and obviously we have technology and we have things now that, far surpass this movie, but just like we talk about Tom Holland being Spider-Man or like Robert Downey Jr. being Iron Man, like Christopher Reeve is Superman and always will be for me. Like, I don't think anybody will ever come along to change that. And I don't know if that's just because of where we were in our lives when we saw this movie, but
yeah,
I don't
that was
think
one
so
of my questions.
I don't think so, because I was much older when I saw Robert Downey Jr. play Iron Man. And of course, he's also the only one we've ever seen do it, so right, I guess it's hard to have comparisons. But
I would say, to go along your line of thinking, he was the first one to play Iron Man, so that's all we can imagine.
Right.
Christopher Reeve is the first to play Superman, so
well,
you can
yes
say,
and no,
like,
because again,
that's
we grew
why
up, but I take it back because we grew up watching George Reeves, though. So we had Superman before.
Yeah, but that was black and white for the
most
part. Not
always.
Not always. It did get color later. But you know what I mean? But this is on the big screen.
Yeah.
This was.
But still, he didn't personify, like, he was not a bad Superman. Don't, you know, either. Don't get me wrong. But he didn't personify the character to me like Christopher Reeve did.
Right.
You know, I just think he played it perfectly. Like you said, again, we go back to Tom Holland being great because he's a great Peter Parker and he's a great Spider-Man. Same thing. Like, he's
I
a great
think Tom
Clark
Holland,
Kent.
I think Tom Holland pulling it off is very impressive considering he wasn't the first. And
right,
I think before Tom Holland, I think we would have said, obviously, Tobey Maguire was for all intents and purposes, he was a quintessential Spider-Man.
Right.
And, you know, Peter Parker. And he, for all intents and purposes, was the first.
Right.
On
and
the
somebody
big screen.
Somebody came later on and surpassed that. But I have a hard time seeing anybody coming along that's going to surpass Christopher Reeve as Superman for me. You know, again,
Brandon
I love Henry
Ruth
Cavill.
Did, I thought
Brandon
Routh was awesome.
Well, Brandon Routh
was
awesome.
And he was supposed to be Christopher Reeve.
But right, he was awesome doing a Christopher Reeve impression. You
right
know? But he, yes, I don't think he was bad at all. I don't think that was a great movie. But I think he was good as Superman. Like, I don't blame him for anything that went wrong in that movie.
I actually enjoyed that movie as well. I think it was, to your point earlier, I think it was a remake, because it is supposed to be a sequel to the
right
Supermans.
Right.
And I think it was a remake of number one, and it was like
it was
a
love
rebooting the
it was a love letter to Dick Donner, you know?
Right.
That's kind of what it was.
I think there were supposed to be more after that, and it didn't
right
get received well, so right they didn't go forward with it. And apparently the notes they took after making that were, we need a more dynamic Superman, and that's fallen flat.
Right.
And it seems like people want they want to go back to that, actually.
Well, I think they, like, I haven't
like
heard anybody, right, but even the criticisms with Superman now are not because they don't like Henry Cavill. So
no.
I think if we had Henry Cavill and they gave him a role similar to like Christopher Reeve's version of Superman, I think people would have received that pretty well. Because
right,
Henry Cavill, you know, he does personify the character. You know, I think he looks the part, obviously, and he's, you know, he's a good Superman. But they don't like the take or that version of the character. So, yeah, well, again, it just goes back, you can't please anybody, right? Because
right, you can't please everybody. And it's, I think they, you know, they tried to get to a more, like we said, dynamic Superman, and yeah, it failed. And we're starting to see them try to pull back on that a little bit and soften Superman, make him more the Boy Scout.
Right.
And, I mean, it doesn't hurt to try, and it tried and failed, so.
Well, and now we'll get another shot at it with the Snyder Cut, right?
Hopefully.
You know, let's see what happens, what the shot footage was.
When
and what,
Superman is reborn,
right,
and we get
that
a
version,
softer, yeah, kinder Superman. That
yeah. Yeah, but we'll have to see what that version of Superman looks like with the Snyder Cut, because, like I said, we don't know where he was going to go with that character.
Right. Well, let's get to Lex Luthor.
Okay.
And Gene Hackman.
All right.
We did a lot of complaining last week.
We did.
Talking about Jesse Eisenberg.
Jesse Eisenberg. But I
and
I
his
disagree
Lex Luthor.
I don't think Gene Hackman was that over the top. Like he wasn't as over I don't think he was as over the top as Jesse Eisenberg was.
I wouldn't say he was as over the top. I was just saying he was over the top. I mean, he was calm, but he wasn't put in a lot of situations in this movie to be calm, cool, and collected. Like Jesse Eisenberg was put into situations in his movie that he could be over the top.
Right.
And where Gene Hackman, he wasn't in any situations to be over the top, but yet was still slightly over the top. I mean, he was bald, but he wore the wigs.
He wore a toupee, right.
The way he talked, the way he was like yelling at, you know, Ned Beatty all the time and making, I mean, Ned Beatty was hysterical.
Yeah.
I mean, watching his character through the thing.
Otis. But, yeah. But I thought, like I said, overall, I thought he was pretty collected. You know, and I mean, he came off as intelligent and
yes,
diabolical. But here's what I wanted to ask. Because again, the leap that he came to discover kryptonite was like, came out of nowhere. It's like, I don't know how you pieced all that together, but.
Right, from newspaper clippings.
Right. But, but here's the thing. He's in his library and he's on the ladder and he's in front of the ends and he says something and Otis moves him over to the M's, which somehow is like 10 sections away from the N's. So
the
I don't know how, I don't know how his alphabet works,
right?
But he says, no, not M, N, and he pushes them back. But what were you actually looking up in the N's that got you to kryptonite meteorite rock? Because that should have been over in the M's. Like, I don't know what book you were looking at that told you that anyways. Cause I was like, what could you possibly have been researching in the ends that got you there? But
and who
yeah, that
wrote
whole
a book
leap
on kryptonite?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. The whole leap that he got to discover kryptonite was like the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And I don't remember that because as a kid, you just
go with it, John.
Yeah, you just go with it. But I was like, how did he determine that pieces of Krypton were on Earth and that they would be radioactive and powerful enough to kill Superman? It's like, nobody knows this stuff, so what
Superman
were you reading?
Didn't even know that, did he?
Exactly. No, he had no idea. So it's like, what book was written that you were reading that had all this information in it? Like, it was so bizarre, you know?
Maybe it was a comic book?
Yeah.
But again, John, love is blind.
I know.
You're supposed to just absorb these movies for what they are. They're comic book movies.
I know.
I thought Lex Luthor, I thought it was pretty cool for a 1978 film when Lex Luthor to push that cop out in front of the train.
Yeah.
That was, you know, pretty vicious. Pretty vicious. Killed the cop right there and was fine with it.
Yeah, I didn't care.
No.
Yeah, he's like, that's what I'm saying. He was very cold. Even when he's like, my mom lives in New Jersey, and he looks at his watch, and he shakes his head and walks away.
Yeah,
he was kind of a jerk, you know?
But, oh, yeah.
I mean, again, that's fine, because he's Lex Luthor. But yeah, he was pretty calculating, and didn't care that he was going to wipe out, I don't know how many millions of people on the California seaboard.
Yeah.
and half of New Jersey. So.
Well, his dad did tell him, land.
Yeah,
people land. Pay through their nose for it. So
doesn't matter if it's radioactive and nobody will be able to live there for the next 1,000 years. Because they didn't talk about that either. It's like, was he going to build his community, you know, 1,000 years from now? Because look at Chernobyl.
Well, like, he doesn't have to build anything. No, there's no damn. I mean, you're just creating. You're just selling the land. People are going to build. He's not building anything.
Well, yeah, but he was hitting it with like a nuclear weapon. Like,
no, he was hitting the nuclear weapon into the ground to make the earth, and not that that's how it works, but make right, that but still, fall like, when, into the ocean.
That whole area of fallout would be uninhabitable for generations.
No, not the way he was doing it. The nuclear weapon was just being used to detonate the fault and have it drop into the ocean. He wasn't trying to, it wasn't like a nuclear bomb and decimating the area like Chernobyl. It was just using the power of a nuclear explosion to make the fault line have everything fall into the ocean. So now your oceanfront property just moved forward without any fallout.
Right.
That's according to the story.
According to the story.
Right.
Yeah. Because somehow Superman goes underground and lifts the entire fault
lifts
back up.
The continental shelf back up. Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah. And let's get to the
The giant elephant in the room. Like, they don't know how time works.
Spun the world backwards.
Yeah.
It's like, I remember being a kid thinking, like, can you do that?
Yeah. I was like, is that how that
wouldn't
works?
Wouldn't we feel it?
Right.
Like, if you're on the planet and then all of a sudden, but then, like, if you spin the world backwards like that, this is where I think I remember seeing this on that, like you said, the Sunday night special.
Yeah.
And you're watching it in your living room and seeing that world spin backwards and then seeing those rocks go back up the hill.
Right.
And you see everything go backwards because he reversed time and then ever so kindly spun it back the other way to get it going again, you know?
Right. So again, then isn't the missile still coming? Right? Because all you did was just turn back time. You didn't stop the missile. Like, he didn't go back
get
the missile.
He backed it up to where the missile had come a while before. And this was this gets to, like, the damage that explosion caused. Because the missile didn't hit and then Lois fell in the thing. It was, remember, it showed everything.
Yeah, I know it was
so
a bunch.
He
it was a chain.
To,
it was a chain reaction.
Right.
But so is there another version of him now flying around in the same time period, you know?
Yes.
And then my favorite part of that whole scene is he just flies away and leaves Lois and Jimmy with their dead car stranded in the middle of nowhere, you know?
Right.
It's like, okay, see ya. He flies off. It's like,
oh, what's he gonna, he's got stuff to do.
It's like the car still broke down. Like, there's no, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, he'll call AAA for them.
Yeah. And they're not upset either. They're like, you know, they're cool with being left
Thanks,
there.
Thanks, Superman.
Yeah. But yeah, that was weird. That whole thing was weird.
Well, he flew from there, and that's where he went, and you know, he grabbed Otis and Lex, dropped him off at
prison. Just dropped him off at the, you know, to the warden, who's just sitting there waiting to receive people.
Right.
You know,
no trial.
Yeah,
no jury.
That's what I'm saying. I was going to say that, but he says when he drops them off, they can stay here and await their trial.
Oh, okay, you're right.
Because I was going to bring that up, too. It's like, like, they don't get any due process. They just go straight to maximum security. And,
right.
You know? But he does say they can sit here and await their trial. Because I was ready. I was cocked and loaded with that one, ready to go. But I just thought it was funny. The warden's like, sure, I'll take them. You know, again, there's no forms to fill out. There's no due process.
Well, even when he brings the jewel thief in, and when they're doing the little montage of him making all his, like, old-timey saves, and he grabs the jewel thief that happened to be climbing up the side of the building, a la Spider-Man.
Right.
And
I want some of them suction cup things, because you see those in the movies all the time.
Here's my John Ciccone moment.
I don't think they work, but...
No, well, they do, but the ones in his hand...
Right, he had to...
You have to push a button. Yeah, you have to compress. You have to let the air out.
But the ones on his knees
don't need anything.
Yeah, he just
like how's he releasing that?
I thought the same thing. I was like,
I'd be stuck there on my knees. Like,
how are those working?
Yeah,
I'd actually be falling backwards and just hanging by my knees because my hands were loose. So
I'm like, I would have to practice so many times on the. I was thinking that when you climb, I mean, he was high up there.
Yeah,
But I love how they had.
And it's going to be a little exerting too, right? Like that can't be
of
the
course.
Easiest thing in the world to do. Right. Can't be the easiest thing in the world to do. So
I don't know how many pull-ups you can do, but
it
probably takes a lot to get up the side of a building.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought the same thing. It's like he's got to depress the plungers on his hands, but he doesn't have to do anything
on
with his
knees. Yeah. I love how Superman's standing.
That was actually pretty awesome, though, the way he was standing straight out. That was cool.
And they show it from inside the building, so you see the bottom of his feet, you know, and it, like, pressed on the glass. I thought that was really cool how he's standing.
Yeah, I did, too. That was pretty impressive.
They even drooped the cape appropriately.
Yeah.
Like, they had it, like, pulled down, like, around his – it was on his back.
Right, but it was down.
It wasn't just hanging straight like Batman and Robin, like –
it wasn't like in like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie that was done 30 years later where you could tell he was laying on a flat, you know.
Right, he was crawling
this
on
actually
the floor
looked
and they
like,
tilted the camera.
This actually looked like he was sticking out from the building. You know, they did a pretty good job with that.
And I guess the last thing I'd say would be the ending when he's flying above the Earth. I thought that was, I mean, especially as a kid, seeing that was a man flying and
it was
above the Earth.
Pretty iconic. Yeah, it looked great.
You see the sun in the background. You see the Earth.
Yeah.
Like the curvature of the Earth for all you flat Earth people.
Right.
And, you know, and just him tooling around up there and switching arms, you know, like side stroke to breaststroke.
Well, that even shows up in some like IMAX commercial recently too. Like that scene shows up. Yeah, it shows up a lot.
It's a
great
scene. And it's then of course scene. You have the score, you know, and it's just, you know, when I watched this movie in the morning before work and like all day that day, I'm like, walk everywhere. You're like, it's just,
it's a great
ending.
Score. I actually remember, you know, going back to watching it on like the CBS Sunday Night Movie. I remember sitting in front of that with my tape recorder and recording the theme so then I could listen to it later on. I had that on my cassette for years.
Yeah.
You know, that I just pirated off the TV broadcast.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know, sitting there, you know, in a room full of my whole family watching and I'm like, shh, don't talk, don't say anything. You know, I got to record this. So.
Yeah. One of the things about John Williams in my podcast that if you're listening to this now on Monday, that podcast was out on Friday. You haven't heard it yet, John, because it's not Friday yet.
Right.
But we were talking about John Williams and the score for Jurassic Park.
Right.
One of the things Tom said, he goes, if you ever have the opportunity to go to like a John Williams tribute where they just play all of his scores.
Yeah.
And before he could finish, I'm thinking thoughts in my head. And I was thinking of when you got to see Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah.
Cause they do that. They do those. Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, if you ever have that opportunity, he goes, don't go.
Really?
Yeah. And you'll hear it in the podcast, but it's pretty funny because what he's saying is like, the guy definitely has a tone. And it's like we see these movies and his talent is that he can pull the emotion out of the movie.
Right.
Right. But when you hear all his scores back to back, what Tom was saying, it just all sounds the same. Yeah. Well, not at first. And he was great at it. He goes, oh, you'll hear like Star Wars and be like, oh, that's Star Wars. And then you'll go, oh, that's Jurassic Park. And then you'll hear another movie. Which one's that?
Yeah.
And they all start to blend together and you're like, oh my God. It's like,
he's got a type.
Yeah, but everybody does.
Right.
You know, that's like saying all of Van Halen stuff sounds the same.
Or all of Da Vinci's, you know, paintings look the same. Well yeah, they do.
They're called Da Vinci's.
Right. That's like, his style.
Right. So yeah, I thought that was interesting about like, and now we're sitting here talking about Superman and, you know, John Williams and all the great scores that he has done.
Right.
And we were talking about it the other night, but, and that was a nice plug for my other podcast too.
There you go. Now we have to listen to it.
Yep.
That's why they put the milk at the back of the store.
That's right. Look at us. And if you're serving milk, you're essential, so you can be open.
That's right.
That's what you should have done. Just start serving milk.
Just start selling food.
There you go. All right. You got anything else?
No, I don't think so.
Did you bash enough on one of the greatest origin stories of all time?
I think I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else. Would you not say it is
one of the greatest origin stories of all time?
Oh, no, it definitely is.
I think
like
it
I
is.
Said, it,
Can you think
I,
of a better origin story?
No, I can't.
Don't take, like, time period special effects into
yeah,
account.
Yeah, no, I can. I'm trying to think. I mean, again, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie had a pretty good, you know, had a pretty good origin story. I would say pretty much direct, with the exception of the webbing, it was right out of the comics. And you know, the origin, the Christopher Nolan Batman had a pretty good origin, but yeah, I think this is probably the best. Yeah, I can't think of one that's
It
better.
Had such a great feel. I loved the part for me, and it's like, I mean, I went over a few of the points, but all that old-timey stuff.
Yeah.
Because this is a comic book from, what was it, 38?
1939.
39? Okay. Yeah. It really tried to bring that feel into it at the time in 78. That's 40 years later.
Right.
You know, it tried to bring that feel, and especially now watching it 40 years after that, I think it really brought that feel, you know, of like this is right out of a comic book from, you know, 40 years previous.
Right.
And that to me is what makes that a more of an like an origin story, and really is like I thought it did a great service to the book, to the character.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
And for all its flaws, I mean, all the flaws that we joke about, all those flaws are in the books too.
They are. And like I said, I don't, you know. It always comes off when we talk about these things that like I disliked the movie or that I didn't right. enjoy it. And that's not the case. Like, you know, it's not compelling for us to just sit here and go, oh yeah, we loved it and be right. done talking. So, I mean, I still love this movie. You know, I definitely do, but it's not without its,
right. Well, you're going to love, our discussion on Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Because Tom Andrey plays the role of John Ciccone.
Of me?
Oh, God, yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, my God. The whole time. It was so funny. you'll like it. It's over 2.5 hours long, but it's right. That's why we keep going on these tangents. It's like typically on that podcast, I just do the scenes. I don't really critique the movie itself.
Right, right.
We did both. So right. We had a blast. All right. What do you guys think of Superman from 19... It's actually called... the title on the book is Superman the Movie.
Right, Superman the Movie.
From 1978. If you haven't seen it, check it out. And let us know what you think of it. Let us know on Twitter at @brightside_chat, or you can email us at thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. When you're done with all that, check out all the great podcasts at Nerdy Legion at nerdylegion.com. And why don't you scribe us a review? See what I did there?
Scribe us a review.
Scribe us a review on iTunes. That would be great. We can use the publicity.
Yes.
Rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your friends. And get out to your store and buy.
Buy something, yes.
That's B-U-Y, not right. buy, B-Y-E. All right, that's it. What do we got coming up on Wednesday? We have another new comic book day. Two in a row. We're on a roll,
Two
people.
In a row, yeah, we do. So we have Dead Day, issue number one, yes, coming out. We have Disaster Inc., number one. Joker Harley Criminal Sanity number 4 and Venom 25.
Now, forgive me for my ignorance. Is that the legit next book or is that a reprint
of
Joker Harley number 4?
No, it's the next issue.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because I love that storyline. I just forgot where we left off so long ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And I know DC has been putting out. They're putting out a couple of like, oh, and second printing of such and such or whatever.
Yeah, so. But no, this is the next
cool.
issue. Yeah,
cool. So we have an actual new issue to look forward to.
We do. Yep.
Cool. I'll be picking that one up.
Hopefully.
Curbside.
Yeah. Hopefully curbside.
That's right. All right. That's it. We will be back on Thursday with, who knows, maybe something else will break. Maybe Snyder Cut's coming out next week. Who right. knows? That would be cool. But we'll see you then. Have a great week. Take it easy. Stay safe.
Take care, everyone.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for listening to The Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors that we'd like to mention. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. A. Pennyworth's Comics and Collectibles in Matthews, North Carolina. You can find them at apennyworthscomics.com. Apothesis Comics and Lounge in St. Louis, Missouri. You can find them at apothesiscomicsstl.com. Friendly Neighborhood Comics of Bellingham, Mass. You can find them at friendlycomics.com. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listened to the Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.